Welcome to this meeting of the Scrutiny Commission of Borcharnwood Borough Council. There are a number of things I would like to remind people of before we start the items on the agenda. Please note that the meeting is being recorded and the recording will be made available on the Council's website following this meeting. Under the openness of local government bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting, and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everybody present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent and ensure that your environment is distraction free. Thank you. This meeting of the Scrutiny Commission is being held as a hybrid meeting, and some meeting participants joining the meeting virtually. I will now ask those members if they can see and hear the meeting. Good evening, Councillor Ashcroft. Can you hear and see the meeting?
Yes, I can very see and hear the meeting. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Ashcroft, sorry, I omitted to say this, is the lead member for Finance, Customer and Support Services and Revenues and Benefits. Kerry Summers, is the Director of Customer Experience. Can you see and hear?
Yes, I can see and hear proceedings, thank you.
And the same to Leslie Tansley, good evening, Head of Finance.
Good evening, I can see and hear the meeting, thank you.
Thank you. Item one on your agenda would be apologies.
We've received no apologies.
Thank you. Item two.
There is Councillor Lenny sends her apologies. She's going to be a little bit late.
Thank you. Apologies for not looking at you. Item two, minutes of the previous meeting. And to ask members if they confirm they are content to receive and note the minutes by raising their hands.
Yes.
Thank you. So that has been passed. Item three is disclosures of pecuniary interest and other registrable and non-registrable items, and there has been none, unless you know different tonight. No, thank you. Item four, declarations of the party whip. There has not been any declarations from the party whip to my knowledge. Item five, questions under scrutiny. There has not been any under procedures 11.16. Item six, pre-decision scrutiny of any specific financial matters to be considered by the Cabinet. There are no such scrutiny matters to be discussed. Item seven, Cabinet items for pre-decision scrutiny. The following items have been identified for pre-decision scrutiny from the Cabinet agenda for the 14th of September 2023. Item 7A is the Capital Plan Amendment Report, which is page 14 on your agenda. I've got to invite Leslie Tansley to open the report. Thank you, Leslie.
Lead member.
Sorry, yes, I've got you down as well. Sorry.
Councillor Ashcroft.
Would you like to open it up? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So, you can see from page 14 onwards, we've got the report which will be presented to Cabinet. And in particular, you can see second recommendations, 1 to 10. And I think the report, the aim is that Cabinet will be looking whether they want to approve those recommendations. So I understand one of the things that the Scrutiny Commission would like to do is to look at the report and look at the recommendations, see if they support those recommendations. Obviously, what we've got here is we've got the 2023 to 2026 Capital Plan, and this report pertains to some amendments in 23-24. So particularly, if you scroll down onto Part B of the report, there's a table of the major amendments and changes indicating what they are and also how they were funded. So that's, I'm sure Leslie can add further if required. So that's my brief introduction. So handing it back over to you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Ashcroft. Any questions
I'll wait to the office, please, Chair.
Sorry, you want to wait?
Yes, thanks.
Leslie.
Thank you, Councillor Ashcroft. Just to add, it's for the scrutiny commission tonight, it's a standard report that we bring to Cabinet 3 times a year. There's an audit trail really since the February's capital update report, so you can see all the items that have been approved in the Appendix 1 since the 9th of February. So that gives a comprehensive list of all the changes to the capital plan. And then Appendix 2 gives the detail of all the schemes that we've got in the plan. Just to point out, the schemes are split into sort of three main areas. One, which are sort of live schemes that are the project plans up and running. We've got place markers, which we class as provisional schemes, so you'll see some items that are provisional in the capital plan, and they're sort of there for any opportunities that may come along. So they were there and they've been set for the beginning of the year. And also what you'll actually see in the plan, we did bring some slippage from the 22 outturn report into the 23 plan as well. You'll see the report split between the general fund and the HRA, and they've got their separate elements of the funding. So I'm quite happy to answer any questions on the report that's going to be presented to Cabinet on Thursday.
Thank you very much, Leslie.
Thank you, Leslie. Can I just say the report's really well set out. It's fairly easy to read, so thank you for that. I just put on page 21, the Capital Plan Amendment Report 2023-24. When you look down, there's delegated decisions as Cabinet. It mentions email, for example, email ACON 14th of June 2023. What do you mean by what's meant by email? Is that to the person, from the person?
Through you, Chair, just to answer that question. So in terms of any amendments to the actual capital programme itself, the email is the officer that's responsible for that capital project, and they've requested an item to be added into the program. Email ACON is the officer looking after the hardware program block sum that's asked for $45,000 to be added into the scheme. So through budget monitoring, that's another route of increasing some of the budget lines into the plan. And you'll perhaps see in the following one, there was an email from Peter Oliver,
yeah,
on the 8th of August. That's looking at moving a budget from one capital scheme to another capital scheme. So I think, as I said earlier, it's sort of it's an audit trail from start to finish of any amendments to the plan that we've got currently, the original budget that was first set.
Thank you. Just got one more question,
Jeff.
That's okay. And the second question, Les, is related to some funding for garages of £50,000. I'm aware that is on our task and potentially might be a task and finish panel. I just wondered what the £50,000 was for. It's on the garages. I can't find my page now.
It is on the agenda tomorrow for the finance.
Okay, so is that not our remit then, really?
Yeah.
So I just wondered what the £50,000 was for.
It's really interesting. Which page? are we referring to?
Page 23, I think. Is that
22, helps? I've got 27 here, so I've written the wrong page number.
I think it's 23, the one I'm looking at.
Is it 22? Whereabouts is it on
23,
there?
23, at the bottom, under Housing and Wellbeing HRA, Stock yep. Maximisation Garages.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Laurie. So it's on page 23, Leslie.
Okay,
N for November, G for golf. Z 2 3 7 4.
Garages. Yeah. So in terms of answering that question, I would have to go back to the head of service to actually find out what that budget is going to be used for. So that's something I can take away this evening and report back before Cabinet on Thursday, because obviously there's a lot of detail in the report. But I mean, Peter Oliver, the Director of Housing and Wellbeing, he obviously looks after the HRA budget, so I can certainly get an answer for you on that 50,000. As you can see, there's no spend at this moment in time, but I'm sure there's a plan in place for that.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you, Chair.
That's another question. And also, I understand there is an item on the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee tomorrow evening about garages. So potentially, Leslie, would you mind reporting that in as part of that item at the meeting tomorrow evening as well? I don't know what the exact content, but I think members might find useful.
No, that's a very valid point. I shall be at Finance and Performance tomorrow evening in person, so hopefully between now and tomorrow evening I'll get an answer to that question.
Thank you. Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Just a quick one, really. It's the item that crosses over page 18 to page 19, so the replacement hardware programme. It's saying we're increasing the total from 45k to 90k, and this is for purchase of laptops and headsets for the new councillors and to replace existing equipment for returning councillors. How much are we estimating per councillor? Because there's 52 wards, and we've had a scheme where we've encouraged councillors to use their own equipment if they choose to. So not every councillor is actually using council equipment. Now, existing councillors have carried over equipment, and albeit, obviously, some will need replacing. Obviously, they don't last forever. But it just seems an incredibly high amount to me.
Leslie, I actually know the answer to this one. So, so we had, after the elections, we had 29 new councillors. So each one of those councillors was given a laptop and the headset and any associated equipment. I actually think of the 29, all 29 took that opportunity rather than use their own equipment. And what's going to be happening is it's estimated in November, December time, all existing councillors will be asked if to upgrade their equipment, because it's a very good thing after... I think most of the councillors have had their equipment at least 4 or 5 years. So that's what the cost is for. Doing the maths, it works out roughly, because a new laptop and the licences as well, because that's the other important thing. So it's a laptop, licences, headset. I don't know the exact figure, but that is where that figure is coming from. That equals the
still
amount.
Feels an incredibly high amount.
I agree, but I did question it at the time.
Can we get a breakdown of that?
Can do, yeah. I've got an email somewhere about it, yeah.
Well, this is my third term with this one.
Yeah, and I get that sometimes they don't last that long and that they do need replacing, you know, a 4-year cycle of replacements. But that would be, if every councillor had a new one every 4 years, that would be 52 grand, say, if we were allowing £1,000, which still seems very generous to me across that 4-year cycle. Just seems a high figure to me. Mm.
Would they be factoring in virtual equipment into that as well?
No, it's literally that. So I can...
I will go back to the head of IT just to clarify that how that figure has been arrived at.
Yeah, even if that can be sent on to when it's reviewed at Cabinet, so they've got the detail of what that breakdown is.
It will certainly include the licences, because that is an element of it as well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Through you, Chair, we will have a bit of detail in order that's been added to the scheme, so I should perhaps have an email which I can have a look at later, so I can liaise with Karen and the head of IT on that as well tomorrow. So there will be a detailed breakdown on that.
Thank you. My question would be about recommendation 8 for the veerment of 60,000 in 23-24 from sheltered housing improvements to delivery of stock condition survey and associated costs budgeted to enable the final payment to be made. So am I to read then that 60,000 is being taken off the sheltered housing improvement budget to delivering a stock condition survey over all of HRA or over the sheltered housing, if that makes sense?
I'm sure we had a stock survey sheltered housing, because that's how the decision was arrived at the Thurmaston.
But this is another of veerment, which is a movement, isn't it?
Yeah.
A movement of 60,000 from the sheltered housing improvement budget to delivery of stock condition survey. And yes, we did sit through.
Yeah, we did, didn't we?
Sheltered housing stock condition survey has already been done, and with sheltered housing being so poor in Charnwood, that 60,000 to move from that would be is quite a lot, really. Can you shed any light on it, Leslie?
Yeah, I think through you, Chair, I think the sheltered housing budget, I think we've now got a plan in place that's there's an item in the capital plan to obviously build. Do some rebuild on the sheltered housing. So whether or not that surplus budget that the Director of Housing and Wellbeing had got left over to then reuse for another stock condition survey, and but again, I'd have to go back and perhaps have a look at that email and get a bit more information from the Director of Housing and Wellbeing on the detail of that.
I think I'd like to, because it smacks to me of robbing Peter to pay Paul. And
I think if the scheme's closed, if the original scheme's finished and there's surplus budget on there, because I think with HRA it's slightly different. It's that the HRA have got sufficient budget to actually fund the HRA schemes, and I think it's just a matter of what happened quite a bit is that through monitoring we keep trying to keep these budgets as tidy and tight as possible, so you've not got big percentage underspends and whatever. So it's just a matter of a bit of housekeeping that we do on these schemes, so I can certainly get you some more information on that.
Thank you, Leslie. I don't think I'm on my own here. I think we've all got housing in our area that could do with 60 grand being spent on it and not being taken to spend somewhere else. So I'm making it more simple than it actually is, I'm sure. But to a layperson like me, that's what it seems.
We must have done to St Michael's Court, at Thurmaston.
So, okay, thank you very much for that, Leslie. But I'm not sure how that goes to get the information, because it will be obviously going to Cabinet tomorrow, Thursday, isn't it?
So, what we'll make sure is after the meeting, we'll ask the officers to get, I mean, Leslie's at the meet here now, and it'll be a case of that information will be reported in at Cabinet. And then on that particular item, maybe an email from Democratic Services to say this is what's going to be reported
clarify,
in.
Really. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Right, thank you very much. Are there any more questions? No? So I would like to hear from the committee here whether you support the recommendations, noting the questions that we have asked. There's three altogether, I believe, wasn't that?
Yeah.
So are we all quite happy to recommend them? But with those two questions, three questions as well.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much for coming, Leslie, and thank you very much, Mr. Ashcroft, Councillor Ashcroft.
Councillor Ashcroft is staying as well.
Oh, you're staying. There you are.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you. Right, so on to item 7B, which is revenues and benefits, and that's future service delivery. This is an exempt report and will be considered under item 13 of the agenda. So I've got to apologise to you two at the moment because we'll be talking about things that aren't there at the moment, so you could sort of switch off and we'll shout you when we want you back. Right, so item 8. Sorry, have I got to read something out there?
No, I haven't.
Item 8, pre-decision scrutiny, cabinet responses, please. Page 25, Karen.
Thank you, Chair. So, since the meeting of the Commission on the 7th of August, the Cabinet considered an item on procurement of a Boyd's repairs contractor, and the Cabinet considered this, acknowledged the work undertaken by Scrutiny Commission, and subsequently Cabinet adopted the officer recommendations as set out in the report. And the action requested this evening is essentially to note the responses and recommendations submitted by the Commission to Cabinet. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Item 9, scrutiny panels, page 27.
So thank you, Chair. So as members will know, on the 31st of August, there was a workshop which all non-executive members were invited to, and the report that's here, it sets out the 10 ideas that were put forward. There is also one extra item which was emailed to me after the workshop from Councillor Wesley, which was around contractor services. He was wondering if there could be a panel about contractor services and the impact on residents directly, and if it was possible to scrutinise that. So we can come on to that. So the action that is required this evening is that you consider each of these 11 ideas, consider if to progress to a panel, possibly table for later review, possibly reject as a panel, but you may think there is another way that it can be dealt with. So it might be a member's briefing session, or it might be a member briefing note. So the upshot will be that you will have only three panels this evening that you need to select, and you will need to also prioritise the order of them as well, in terms of because Democratic Services can support four panels. We've already got the budget scrutiny panel underway, so the other three probably need to be staggered a little bit, so you may wish to think about that as well. And also, finally, it would be ideal if you chose a chair and potentially a vice chair, although that is optional for each of these panels. Agree those, then after this meeting today, the chairs will get together with myself and potentially the head of service to start scoping out the detail of the scrutiny panels, and then the scoping document will hopefully come back to the next Scrutiny Commission meeting. So the detail is very much for the scoping document, so I'm trying to guide you that we don't need to get into the minutiae this evening, you just need to decide which panels you would like to go forward. So if we go through them in, has anybody got any questions before? I was thinking we'd go through them in order to see. So the first one is utilising council assets, brackets, garages. Now, I understand at tomorrow evening's Finance and Performance Committee, there is already an item on the agenda that's going to be looking at this. So I think, in all honesty, it would be best to actually have that meeting tomorrow evening, and then potentially that might come back, because we need to, the members need to have information.
I think the person that requested that is also the chair of the committee tomorrow, so it might be surplus to requirements.
So it's not lost, but we just need to have some information about that. Number two was about housing needs, an investigation of the effectiveness of the current housing register, and whether the process could be streamlined. There was a suggestion of whether a separate list could be created for residents that require adapted properties. So you may recall, how was the priority given to adapted properties? So that was one suggestion put forward. How do members feel about that idea?
Councillor Lenny.
Yeah, this is very topical for me, because that's the reason I'm late. I had a call from an imminently homeless person, and they are the most difficult to resolve, because there doesn't seem to be a proper access for them until they're within days of being evicted. And this particular couple that phoned me, they're both disabled.
You may wish, we're in public sessions, so you might not want to go too much into detail.
But it's the third one I've had to deal with this year, in a similar, where we've got a similar last second minute, and some of them can't just be placed in emergency accommodation. In fact, it's just, the whole thing's so stressful for them, and you just think to yourself, you know, if a landlord's selling, which seems to be more commonly the problem, then you haven't got the choice, and you know that it's going to come, and you know that they're going to have to try and find other accommodation. But if they've not got much money, or they're in, they're on benefits, it's, you're stuffed, aren't you? And there doesn't seem to be anything catering for them.
So this is housing needs, investigation of the effectiveness of the current housing register.
Well, they're not allowed to, if they're being evicted, they're not allowed to join the register.
Not until a certain time. Mm. And I couldn't even tell you what that certain time was. Mm. Sorry, Laurie.
Yeah, I tend to think this is probably something that needs in looking at, because I think we, all of us as ward councillors, are very often getting contact from people who are very frustrated with the process and can't navigate it very well, particularly that point that the councillor who suggested this raised about people who require adapted properties, because it all gets, I think you kind of alluding to, Councillor Lenny, it all gets all mixed up in one bag, for want of a better word. And yeah, so I think streamlining it is something that should be at least looked at, if there's that many residents struggling with the process.
I think the word you used there, navigate, and I think that's a poignant word there, because it is hard to navigate around.
The situation will get worse because the no fault eviction changes as well.
Yeah. So we are all saying that would be a good choice, and from that I've sort of marked a chair and a vice chair from that. Councillor Laurie Needham, would you be chair of that?
I was just going to say, I think it was Councillor Maynard that suggested it initially.
Yeah, I think it was actually. Yeah. It wasn't my original.
If Councillor Maynard doesn't want to do it, then I would be prepared.
So should I approach Councillor Maynard and ask her?
Just be careful around me before you say,
don't speak.
But I have put down here Needham and Lenny. So.
And right. Vice Chair Lenny. Okay.
Yeah, that'll keep me trapped short now.
The next one on here is about public transport and tying in with the net zero by 2030 aims, and an investigation into whether better public transport links could be provided between villages and the surrounding areas. Again, well, how do members feel about that one? I mean, remember, we've got a long list here, so...
Yeah.
My concern with this, I agree with the point entirely,
but I would wonder how much resource we would put in and how much influence we would have over the outcome on it, because so much of it falls within county, or obviously commercial, but from authorities' perspective it's county. I think a lot of work would go in, but we'd be very limited on getting clear outcomes out of it.
We couldn't necessarily influence the decision.
Do we know who put forward this idea?
I think that was Councillor Maynard as well, because I remember her saying her daughter
I completely agree with the sentiment behind it. I just am slightly concerned over
That's the first time Laurie and I met, wasn't it? Outside my house at the bus stop. But the loss of 100, the 100 service.
It was the 6.
Oh, was it the 6? Yeah.
I
remember it's still going. I thought it was 100.
They cut the route anyway.
Sorry, Councillor Needham.
This one I was interested in. I was interested in what Karen was explaining to us about the different types of panels and what they can do, and the example of doing this in another local authority, and that you can, although you can't necessarily directly control some things, it kind of shines a light on a problem and highlights it, and it might be an opportunity to almost get all the stakeholders, I hate that word, but in one place and really shine a light on it. So for example, I was thinking if we do take it forward, that potentially this could be one of those express ones where it's a bit more of a fact-finding, and you could potentially invite sort of like witnesses, so people who are really struggling, or, you know, I know of people that have had to give up jobs because of the
There's definitely been problems in Bristol, I don't know, about with the buses.
I understand both points, but I just think it's something that really is, again, a very big issue for residents. It has significant impacts on their lives.
I would like to extend that. I would like to also add S106 monies because we fix that to a development. You know, somebody's bought a house in a development because it's being serviced by a bus for 5 years, and then all of a sudden that goes.
All the money's there at the start with, and then somebody decides, oh, I don't really need to do that. And then you don't get the bus service going through the development, like they said at the beginning it was going
so
to happen.
So it would probably be handy for us to know how many times that does work, you know, happens, where they've promised a bus service there and it's not come to fruition.
Yeah, I think the very fact that there's so many different agencies involved with it is in itself perhaps worthy of putting them almost in one place and saying, look, yes, it comes through on section 106, but then it gets cut and then the county can't take it on, and just see if there's, you know, having those conversations across the different bodies may, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Do we have any volunteers to chair that?
Can I ask something before you go on to that bit?
No, I'm not volunteering.
We've got you down for the other one.
Yeah.
Nobody dare move.
I wonder whether there'd be any
Glenn's very quiet at the end.
Any clout of the county councillors for bits of Charnwood to get involved as well, especially
they
if any
could be
of
a
them
witness. They could come along as a witness with their information.
But if anybody's got one that particularly interested, then that would be
I'm not following that.
Could we involve county councillors?
Yes, choose how you move. The department is choose how you move, which would be the department that would that handles choosing how you move.
Yeah.
So that would have the minibuses in it, the taxis, and so on. They don't run the buses, but they.
That's when you scope it out. If this goes through, you could look at who you want to invite to those panels, and if it's an express one, you know, get them all in on the same day, preferably.
Can I say that we're only on the second one though, and we've got some others to go for before we decide on what of the three.
I've got two questions now, if that's okay.
They're kind of slightly technical questions, I suppose, so I understand it properly. Karen, you said when we do the scoping document, that's usually between the chair yourselves and the head of service.
Yeah.
Because we don't have
a head of service.
Yeah, we don't have a head of service for sort of what we'll cover. Yeah. So like you, Brenda, were just saying about choose how you move is county, and there must be a lead member that covers that there. We've not got one, so how would that work? And then the second question was, if we were to pick more than three that we thought were worthy of the panel tonight, we wouldn't necessarily have to do them all this year.
No.
So then would we then, when we've decided which ones,
prioritise.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
And of course some will be formal, some will be informal, some will be express.
Mm. Okay.
Yep. It's just to know which ones we would go forward for. So that is something that we would go forward for. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. The next one, number four, is climate change and emergency. This was suggested as a panel. However, I was looking through the forward plan, and in October, Cabinet is actually considering the climate change and emergency as a strategy. So I think that should be picked up as a pre-scrutiny item, so it's rather than a panel. And there is a member briefing as well. So I think
again, I'm sure this is there's something about this on tomorrow's agenda for finance and performance
as well. So exactly.
So it's going through two scrutiny bodies as well, isn't it? Then that would be pre-decision, isn't it?
Pre-decision is slightly different too.
Sorry,
so we and this is the other thing with panels. We don't want to duplicate work that's been done elsewhere. So therefore it's. So it's going on is it finance performance, and then it's obviously going to cabinet in October. Yeah. So we'll be picked up as pre-scrutiny.
It's here.
Yeah. Okay. The next one is dementia friendly council, and I'm going to put it up with number six, loneliness as well. How do members feel about this one being a panel?
I don't know if they should be together. I think they're two quite different things for me.
But the same department, the same, we'll handle both of them. So probably this is something to have a briefing on and then decide whether then it's separate or together.
Because we don't know.
Because we don't know what the partners are or anything. So we probably need some more information on that first, because we don't know who's... how many charities are out there to be involved with it, and it would be our department, the communities and
wellbeing.
Yeah,
what is it, Sally? Communities and wellbeing, is that? Or we've got something. There's another title now. It's another title. Anyway,
charity. Yeah.
Begins with communities.
Yeah,
and probably have a briefing on that.
Well, I was going to say that I don't know whether other parishes have, but. Certainly in Shepford, we've already had a dementia-friendly visit from Dementia Friends, I think they're called.
Yeah. And that's more about awareness. Yeah. This is about looking at service.
How we provide the service for dementia.
Oh, so it's not dementia-friendly
awareness.
The dementia-friendly council talk that we had was about recognising the difficulties that people with dementia have if they're coming into our buildings.
I believe that our staff are trained on that.
So
let's get the briefing to find out what the current situation is.
And loneliness is certainly being addressed by the volunteer centres that are run by John Store House.
But they're only Loughborough based.
And
Shepshed, yes. But Syston
and
volunteer centre, Thurmaston, you know.
So a member briefing to find out more about dementia friendly. It's not just awareness, but are staff being trained? What services?
Yeah.
How they might be different. And do you want the loneliness in there as well, so you can have a look? Yeah. Okay. Because I think it's one and the same service area. So
I think that would be really useful to know what's out there, as we said, to get some information, and then we can work out.
Because you've got the carers of dementia patients that are lonely because they're having to talk to somebody who cannot probably converse. So even the carers would be probably lonely as well. So we could put carers in that.
Then carers.
Sorry, can I just ask? So, do you want an all-member briefing on that, or do you just want a scrutiny commission briefing?
I think an all-member briefing would be good.
All-member briefing.
And then from that, we could decide as a body whether we want it or not.
Now, as I just word of caution. As you know, the member induction programme is nearing its... So it's been quite intense, so we won't be probably able to put anything in until maybe end of October, potentially more like November. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And then, so that moving on to number seven, which is HMOs, houses in multiple occupation. There was quite a lot of discussion at the workshop on this. It has been looked at, and there's been research on this a number of times. And you know, I need members to give me a bit more direction in terms of would this make a good panel, or is there been enough? As a,
I think we just need to direct everyone to Councillor Smidovich.
Yes.
Yeah. She's the authority on HMOs.
Yeah. She's written the book, hasn't she?
So you're going to reject that one outright, are you? That's would be your preference.
I think there was a lot looked into when the licensing was done.
Well, we've got a licensing on the next scrutiny. We have got selective licensing, and the majority of selective licensing is in the HMO areas. Mm. So a need might arise from that. And so we could, just see. Sorry,
Councillor
Gray.
Not being very fierce about it, because there are some city councils that are very much more heavy-handed.
I know they are. I am one of them. That's being victimised, I think. So I'm going to sell my property, so there'll be a family without a house because of
this. I'm on about HMOs because
it was selective licensing as well.
They don't a lot of the landlords are charging the same as the ones that have registered and just not doing anything for it, if you like, the safety.
Well, I'd like to know how many have been fined because the time period's up, but that will come out in the scrutiny. Councillor Gray.
Well, I think where this specific concern came from, because I think I raised it, didn't I, and Councillor Goode, and I know Councillor Worrell has also raised it, possibly by email, was actually looking at the frustration around permission being granted for more HMOs in Loughborough or for extensions to existing HMOs alongside attendant traffic issues, alongside housing shortages, so in applications going in for more residential properties to be converted, and alongside the university saying at the LCCG that actually, as far as they were concerned, and obviously they have a vested interest, that there is ample student accommodation in Loughborough at this point. There does not need to be any more accommodation off campus. And I think the frustration, particularly of Loughborough ward councillors around residents, feels so strongly about this. We've got this is a slightly different thing, but the application for the huge student block going in along opposite the leisure centre, and seemingly absolutely nothing to stop this because the developers rule, don't they? It's about profit, actually. And I don't know how you start to influence change, whether or not we can look at this in a different way, but I do wonder whether, given that it is becoming, we're receiving so many emails about this, whether an all-member briefing for some of us who are new and are coming into this. So, rather than this being dismissed, if we could have that briefing, that would be really helpful.
So I think around the planning as well, because the 20% has been mentioned here, and it's been quite a while since I was a regular on plans, but I can remember this Venn diagram of 20% that's converging onto everything else, and you didn't know where the circle finished and the other one started, and where they overlapped, you'd got 40%, and was that right? So if planning could come into that as well, be really helpful.
Yes, because that's sort of an argument put forward at the planning committee, that it's not that the extension or HMO is for students, it could be for anybody, that new property.
And there's a lot of HMOs now that are not student properties, and there's quite a lot of demand there.
It's a different option for people who may want
a more affordable option.
An all member brief, rather than rejecting it, an all member briefing on that. Brownfield sites is the next one, and this was about is knowing if there is a brownfield site register, how often is it updated, and then a map of brownfield sites. Now, as part of the local plan process, there will have been some exercise undertaken on this, and again I think probably a briefing note, because there will be some information out there potentially, but again it's over to members to decide if that's the way forward.
See, I think, like, again, I raised this, didn't I? And again, I know there's a number of us concerned about this, because actually, yes, brownfield sites are mentioned in the local plan, but I'm not convinced that all the potential sites have actually been, you know, when you actually read through, have actually been properly identified for their potential. And again, I realise that there is a huge disincentive to developers. But in terms of, you know, net zero, in terms of residential property that is close to services, in terms of meeting housing targets, are we missing something really crucial? Mm. You know, so I think this is really quite a pressing issue.
Okay. Shall we find out first of all
a briefing first?
A briefing note to find out how the brown sites are recognised. Mm. And to what extent can we, as a council, make or request that these are built on, as opposed to larger developments? Mm. I mean, I know that there's just one in Thurmaston, and the owners just don't want to sell it. Mm. You know, it's a brownfield site in the middle, and they don't want to sell it. They're quite happy land banking. Mm. Until, because they've got a business, and then you've got this land, and of course they're waiting till they don't do the business, and then it'll be done as a whole. Mm. And you know, as a council, we can't force people to sell their brownfield. Mm. So, yes, Laurie. Sorry, Councillor Mead.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. Maybe I might be mixing things up a little bit too much, but when we're getting some information on that, could we also have some information about? Whether we can or have any strategy for using, say, like empty commercial properties, particularly in like Loughborough Town Centre, to also, because I know that some of that's been happening in Leicester City, where they're now changing quite a lot of shops that can no longer be let, and they're changing use into, well, flats and things.
Mm. As in council-owned commercial premises?
Yeah, well, I would personally need to know more, because I don't know anything about it. So could that tie into the same information
because
exercise?
The outcome is essentially about finding properties to meet the housing need, isn't it? So
Because half the issue, I don't want to go into it too much because we'll be here all night, half the issue with the commercial properties that are empty is that they're not for let.
Yeah.
So that's the issues that we've got in Birstall. We don't have many empty properties that are actually available, but we have a number of empty properties.
And what would the owners be doing then?
They're just sitting on them. No idea why. We've got Bookies that's been closed 3 years. Big William Hill double unit closed pre-COVID. It looks the same as it did the day they exited it, and there's a number of other ones, but I've brought it up previously, there's nothing we as a council can do with those.
I can remember having
if they are council owned, it's certainly
I just think maybe if we just even if the information comes back saying we can't do that because of XYZ, that helps us to understand, doesn't it, as members, why we can't, you know.
And then it draws really a line under it, or it might not.
I can remember having the council tax panel pre-COVID 6-7 years ago, and if a council house has now been vacant for 2 years, they have to pay up 200%.
Yeah, and then the council it's not the same as three business rates.
So why isn't it the same? Can it be the same?
It's a government thing.
You've been listening in on the quiet, haven't you? Go on, Luke.
I just thought it might help. Yeah, they're completely different legislation, so we can't charge the council tax empty home premium on empty properties. But empty properties don't get free rates, they still get charged rates even if the property is empty. Those empty properties are still being charged business rates, but we don't have any powers to enforce them back into use in the way that we do with housing, I'm afraid.
But do we actively get in touch with Dave Hill? Is it Dave Hill?
That was William Hill.
William Hill. I'm not a gambler.
I sent Kerry a list previously.
Do you knock on the doors and say, come on,
Rent it.
We do actually go out and visit. We go out and visit. We use all different insight mechanisms to try and find the owners and track the owners down through Companies House. So we do use all the tools available to us to try and make sure we're gathering those business rents. Obviously, sometimes we're not successful. We have people that do things like set up fake tenancies to make it look like there's somebody in there, and then it changes ownership and hands. But we do everything that we can. Pete and the team are really quite hot on trying to do all of this aspect, but we do have our hands tied behind our back, actually. We really have very little power to bring those empty units back into use through business rates legislation, essentially.
What if the empty commercial are renting it out at the top as domestic? Mm. Does that not...
They're different properties with different class use.
So
if the top is being used as domestic, they'll be paying council tax, and we'll make sure that the property's split in valuations for that. Right. But if the bottom is still commercial, then that's where we're extremely limited in terms of our powers.
But if the top is empty and has been empty for 2 years, and it was previously domestic, you could charge them 200%.
For the top.
Yeah, the empty homes premium, yes, for the top. Yeah, we will be doing that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so on that basis, I think you've probably got the information you need on that one, so maybe...
It's just the brownfield.
Right, okay. Then the next one is about litter picking and community litter picks. And this was essentially about making it easier for communities to do litter picks. How does members feel about having a scrutiny panel on this?
To be perfectly honest with this, looking after waste and management as I did, I can only say what I see, and particularly, and I don't really like to bring ward villages, but as an example, our ward is twice a week we have litter pickers, council litter pickers, and then we have a lot of volunteers that the Wombles or whatever organisation there are, but I don't really feel that, knowing the KPIs as I do, that we do have an issue with litter picking. Certainly,
where this stems from is a conversation with the Wombles and South Leicester, who rang me up and said that Charnwood is the most unhelpful council in Leicestershire, and of collecting the items, of giving out the bags, and on all of that. So I would just like to see Charnwood be more willing to support the community.
At that. Only because I have contact with the people that do the litter picking in Birstall, who speak highly about how it works, and they've always got access to bags. They've had loads of equipment given from Charnwood to them to do it.
Well, apparently Anstey rang up, their Wombles rang up for bags, and they were delivered 8.
But do you know...
But it was the... what's his name again? Who rang? Rob Butler, who does South Leicestershire, and he says, is there anything you can do? He says, we're just not getting anywhere with Charnwood. And they're the most unhelpful district.
But does that need a panel? That's the question.
No.
I think it needs just to have a
conversation. Well, I have had a conversation with Matt.
Sarah Ritchie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when we are having that conversation, can we raise the issue about how easy or not easy it is to report it online? Mm-hmm. Because if anybody has actually tried to do that, it's incredibly frustrating. Yes, it is. The forms often don't work very well. Or you spoke before the meeting, didn't you, Councillor Seaton, saying it has to be reported as fly tipping when it's not. So even if there was just a...
That's what I mean, being a bit supportive.
We used to have the
clean agreement straight away, and it worked well. Yeah. But because of the cost, we've had to transition to forms. Forms don't work nearly as well as clean agreement.
I don't know if there could just be a simple solution where if litter picking groups just contacted, even say, this particular email inbox, rather than having to go through the form. Just something simple. So I'm just saying
suggesting then that you're going to reject this as a panel, but you feel quite strongly about that action is taken to be more proactive about getting the equipment. feedback about the cleaner, greener email and the, now the move over to the forms potentially.
It has been running for a while now and it still doesn't feel like it's slick. When we first raised it, when it first set up, it was it teething problems? Would people kind of get used to the new system? And once, but we've been in it a while now and it's still
not slick.
It must
be about a year now. We've abandoned cleaner, greener, mustn't it?
So,
I think with equipment, I know from history that from, I don't think bags, I mean, I actually asked for some extra recycle bags and I literally got about six just clear bags.
Yeah.
And I messaged Matt, obviously I was in a fairly privileged position, wasn't I? But then the last time I recommended, I got a whole wad, so it could have been we've been low on stock. But with the equipment, I know what happens, the equipment isn't out to parish councils and to group, they don't get the equipment back.
They're given the equipment now, so our scouts guides
aren't given the equipment.
Well, maybe it was at a certain time when they were doing it, kind of like, back. Because certainly the people in Bursal were given loads of kit to keep. It was a litter picking group. But they were given all the pickers, the hoops, the bags, all to keep.
Councillor Gray.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, something about reporting here. I mean, when I was elected, it was sort of the phasing out of cleaner, greener. But since then, you know, I've come across so many residents who, just as you said, Councillor Needham, try and report litter or bins that need to be emptied. Mm. And they say the forms are just a nightmare. So, you know, I'm going around saying report, report, report. And they're saying, well, it doesn't work. And I'm just wondering if there would be any mileage at some point in reviewing that transition and how that's working for people and not working and getting, you know, I don't know.
So we can do an action note, send it to the, I mean, Carey's online, but the custom services to say that, you know, we have got...
Could we have an update with regard to how the situation has transitioned from cleaner, greener to online form reporting? Maybe an update of some description?
And if it's, how effective it's been. I think Carey might want to come in.
And how easy it is for councillors to actually ring up and say, Humberston Lane is just shocking this morning. It used to be, I used to have one person that I could do that to. And now, I'm not mentioning any names at all, but obviously it's where I live. And I get an email back saying, fill the form in. I want something instant. I want somebody to go up there and litter pick Humberston Lane. Yes, Carey.
I was just going to say, in terms of doing some kind of report in terms of transition, we can try. If I'm perfectly honest, the feedback that we've had generally that has been negative has been only from members. We've had no formal complaints, no informal complaints from customers regarding the transition. That's what I'm saying. We're not getting any directly through to us. So we had, at the beginning, we had some teething bits and we made some tweaks and changes. But since then, you know, we're seeing huge volumes of inquiries coming through on the forms. We're getting very little feedback. There's issue with forms. So it would be really beneficial to us if there's certain forms like you've mentioned tonight that you're getting. You know, Russell Clark is the person to email to say, you know, we've got a number of customers that are saying, we're trying to report some cops. It may be that we need to add on a more specific form that is specifically for some of the issues you've raised, or we need to tweak and change it. So if we get that feedback, we can try and do something to change it and make it easier.
Okay.
But actually, in terms of producing a report for yourselves, there'd be very little in there. Actually, it would probably show positive, because that's what we're hearing. We're not hearing some of the things I think that you may be hearing, which we need to hear, because obviously we can't change things if we don't know. So
could we do a tweak on these forms to do, instead of flight it, could there be a section on there, community litter pick or something
Or it might be we do a completely separate form specifically for that,
that,
you know, that makes it very easy.
That
you don't want
to
make it overcomplicated. You know, I think more simple forms might be better than trying to make one big overly complex form.
You
know, I can take that feedback back, but it'd be useful to get some of that from yourselves to talk, and Russ can then come and talk to you individually, or particular members, to go, right, what is it we need, and we can have a look and see how much of an issue it is. As I say, it may just be a quick form that we can build and that'll resolve that for you.
And the other question is bags.
that are given out, and black bags obviously is a no-no. We shouldn't be handing out black bags now. So the bags that we do hand out, are they the see-through clear bags?
It's just a clear one.
I don't know that, I'm afraid. I can ask Matt.
All of that's in charge with once.
Yeah, clear ones.
Yeah.
For recycling.
Because I know that when I drive around, there's lots of groups that have done it. Yeah, and there's got black bags at the side. And, you know, that's not good from environmental point of view.
You wouldn't know whether that was
Charmwood litter.
Well, I think it used to be, obviously, that they, when people litter pick, they used to email Clean Agreeder and to say, this is where I've litter picked and I've left it at this bin. So they would have to say which bin it was at so that they would know that when they get there, that's from the
litter pick. Just
but I don't know what the new process is as far as how they communicate that the litter pick is in that location.
You'd have to do it as a fly tip. Mm. On the
which
form.
Is not right, really.
No. Okay, so we'll communicate that to Russell Clark.
And I'll drop him an email to make him aware that.
So the upshot of that is we're not going to have a panel on that, so we're going to reject that, but obviously undertake those actions separately.
So how many emails to Russell tomorrow?
I was just about to say, do you think it would be worth maybe yourself sending one chair and copying the rest of us in? Rather than poor Russell.
And then number 10, we've got tackling substance misuse, to look at how the council could better support partners to tackle and improve substance misuse across the borough. And we had a discussion earlier about this, that it would be helpful to have Inspector Stokes come in, and he was actually booked in at some point and then he got cancelled. Can't remember why. And we could have Inspector Stokes come along and do a member briefing again. And one of the focus would be about tackling substance misuse. That then could inform potentially a future panel if you get the right information. So would that be appropriate?
Yeah, I've
got lots of nods there, so that's good. So that's a all-member briefing.
I'd happily chair that if it's need to be.
Substance issue. You heard that.
It's on the recording.
So then the 11th suggestion, which came in after the workshop, was about contractor services and the impact on residents directly, and scrutinising how the council selects contractors and the performance measures we apply. Now, and the specific was on it's about the welfare of residents, and I think it was more. Now that is a very wide scope, and there are very clear procurement rules in place which officers must abide by before they go out for procurement. And in fact, a number of contracts have to go through cabinet. So as a scrutiny commission, you could be selecting the larger contracts as pre-scrutiny items anyway. So again, is there a need for a scrutiny panel when you can actually select the pre-scrutinise these?
I'm going to defer to you because your previous line, contracts.
I can see where Lee's coming from if I'm thinking on the same lines as him, and that's in respect of how some of the contractors liaise and treat residents, because different contractors we've had have been quite neglectful, say they're turning up for an appointment.
Yeah, that is exactly.
And then they don't show, then someone has to stay. And particularly, you know, we talk about loneliness and dementia friendly, the more probably vulnerable groups. So I think there's scope at one point to look at the behaviour of the contractors as opposed to specific contractors, because that process in itself is very tight, isn't it? The procurement process is very tight indeed, and monitored. And it's monitored about religiously with KPIs on the corporate plan. So I think from that perspective, I think we can't really do anything on that, but it's how the contractors are with
customers,
residents, customers.
Councillor Needham.
So within that, is there ever anything within the contracts that stipulates things like, would there be any sort of measures taken if we felt that their customer service standards were low, or do we have, you know, are there any requirements on the companies to, you know, provide things like, you know, is it factored in when we're awarding the contracts? Like, would it go in somebody's favour if, say, their staff had taken training on vulnerable adults or something like that? Do you see what I'm driving at, Cara?
And is it sort of pressed on them that they are representing the council?
So obviously I can only really talk from the revenues and benefits contract that, you know, we currently have. So we do have performance measures in there around customer satisfaction, and we can also stipulate within our contracts that, you know, they must have certain training and all staff must be trained to a certain standard and they must have that training regularly. So you can put all of that in a contract. And obviously, even with the KPIs, you know, you can make them so that there's financial penalties attached to those. It's difficult with something like satisfaction, because obviously it depends on the customer. A customer doesn't get a decision that they like, they can obviously say they're not satisfied. Mm. But we certainly have that in the revenues and benefits contract. There is a requirement to have certain aspects of training, and there is a requirement for them to have certain levels of customer satisfaction. And we do quality monitoring on things like their calls, and they have to reach a standard that we set for them within the contract. So those things are, and that's part of contract management. And obviously all contracts should be managed according to the, you know, to the stipulations that we put in there. But it will vary, obviously, from contract to contract. As I say, I can only comment on the one that I'm responsible for, which is revenues and benefits.
So it's feeling like no scrutiny panel.
I think it is monitored, but I think that obviously the contractors are going to say the right thing and tick the right boxes, don't they? But then it's the behaviour. But you can't necessarily... We can monitor it till the cows come home, but how a person actually behaves when he's in a resident's home is different to the KPIs. So it's probably worth keeping on a radar if we can at some point when we've got...
And how would we manage the complaint system? Say if somebody, I don't know, the contractor was rude to them, and that they'd just go through a normal complaint system.
That's customer service, that is customer satisfaction, Kerry, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So if I may, so obviously if somebody wants to make a complaint about a contractor, whether that's Serco or, you know, Capita, for example, the complaint comes through to us. They can use our corporate complaints, and then we'll investigate that way. Also, in terms of, say, for example, you've mentioned there, if a member of staff is rude, I can say from again our contract, I've had members of staff taken off our contract because I've not been happy with their performance. So, for example, in the contact centre at Coventry, I've asked for individuals to be taken off the contract because I don't believe they're meeting our standard, and that's happened. So, you know, that we do have mechanisms and standards within those contracts that do enable you to request things like that, where you know, obviously it's not, you know, first time you're out, all staff can make mistakes at different times. But obviously if you find that there's a consistent pattern of you know, underperformance, and they're not representing the council in the same way that we would expect our members of staff to represent the council, we do have the powers within the contract to request that officers, you know, are dealt with appropriately and in line with the same way we would performance manage our own officers if necessary. So, you know, there are mechanisms in order to do that. What we have to be, you know, done is made aware. So we need to be made aware of, you know, by our customers through either the complaints process or by notification. And then obviously, you know, we should be taking that up. And that follows the line of, you know, a whole purpose of the council keeping the customer at the heart of what we do, our customer service strategy. Just because they're contractors, we don't want our customers to feel they're getting any different service than they would if it was an in-house service. So I think, you know, that's important. I do think that ethos is felt by the services that have those contracts, but it is an ongoing challenge, I think, in some ways, because there is that distance between ourselves and the contractors that are actually delivering the service at the end. So it's a constant kind of effort that we do have to make sure they're adhering to our standards.
Thank you. It's just, well, so judging all, by the nodding heads here, I think we're all satisfied that the box is ticked and it's monitored. And the complaint system is the same for contractors as it is for things. Yeah. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yes? Yeah. Okay, so we'll cancel that one.
Okay, so that's all 11 ideas there. So from that, there's two panels that have been selected, the housing needs and public transport.
Mm-hmm.
Public transport is going to be an express panel potentially. Did we say who the chair potentially might be for that one? Have I missed that? Do you need to put...
And that was also Councillor Maynard.
She selected it, yeah, but I don't know whether she'll...
That would be cruel.
I know that if it's an express panel, it's only probably going to be a day, but I still don't know whether she'd want to do both.
No. What we can do in democratic services, we can say to Councillor Maynard that the two panels she put forward have been selected, and however, we appreciate she might not be able to chair both of them, and I think that would be... So we'll see where that goes from, and then we can ask for expressions of interest and then potentially choose a panel chair from that. So we've got housing needs, and do we have a sense on the housing needs if that's what type of panel? A formal panel?
I think a formal panel.
Okay, right.
Because I think witnesses are needed there and
And then, obviously, we've gone through and we've got either a mix of things are already happening, pre-scrutiny, briefing notes, all member briefings, follow-up actions to highlight any issues, that type of thing.
Inspector Stokes for training.
Inspector Stokes as
not training.
So that's that on the panels. And then I just wanted to report on the budget scrutiny panel. Expressions of interest. Oh, Sally.
I was just going to say, so you know the ones that you want a member briefing on, shall I table them? Do you want me to put them in the table? Because then we can have another look after you've had your briefing.
That's a good idea.
Thanks, Sally. Yes, please, Sam.
Yes, very good idea that. Budget scrutiny panel. We've got six members have put their names forward. So Councillor Charles is the chair. And then we've got councillors Monk, Popley, Seaton, I can't even read my own writing now, Wesley and Haynes as the members on that budget scrutiny panel. And that's already, so the next first meeting of that is scheduled for the 24th of October. So that's underway, which is good. And that's it on this scrutiny panel item. Thank you very much, members.
Thank you.
It was a good workshop for Karen,
Yes, it was. Right, thank you very much. We've not finished.
No.
And right, so now we're on to the item 12, exempt item for pre-decision scrutiny, revs and bends,
no,
future service. No, we're not. Okay.
Item 10,
scrutiny work programme. Didn't we just do that?
No.
Oh, we did it before everybody else came, didn't we? Okay. Thank you, Karen.
So thank you, Chair. Scrutiny work programme. This relates to the finance and performance scrutiny work programme, which is attached as an appendix. I wasn't planning to go through it in any detail.
No.
Is there any changes, any amendments that members may wish to make? I'm looking around the room. And
page 30.
No. That's literally now for noting then. The next item, if you don't mind me going on to item 11, is the Scrutiny Commission work programme. And it sets out the work programme and the list of key decisions for which you may want to look at for pre-decision scrutiny. So I wasn't planning to go through the scrutiny programme in detail, but the one thing I would like to go through is the list of key decisions which get published on a monthly basis. So I'm looking at page 43.
So we've got the climate changes discussed earlier.
Yeah, so I'm going to suggest that the climate change strategy and action plan be added to the work programme as a pre-scrutiny item. Review of the planning enforcement plan potentially be added. I've also picked out the economic development strategy, also be added to pre-scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
And then other matters have already been picked up in the work programme already. For example, the corporate delivery plan is in March 2024. So is there anything else anybody's looked down that list?
Housing capital programme as well, wasn't there?
The housing capital programme is already scheduled, I believe, for March.
March
24. And so is the local development scheme. for March 24. So you've actually got a number of pre-scrutiny items.
The only other one that might be worth us looking at is the strategic partners part of the grants. So it's not the general community grants that come every 3 months or whatever it is.
Mm.
That's the one setting the levels of grants for the strategic partners for the next 2 years.
That's in January.
I think that's worth us looking at.
Okay. Which one's that? Sorry.
It is
page 44.
So it's Charnwood Grants Strategic Partners.
So for John Storehouse and places like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And to take to Tini. Is that still going? Tini and
the Mario.
Okay, so that's so our members are happy with those suggestions. Yeah, good. And now you're moving on to the exempt
exempt item.
Thanks so much, girl.
Thank you.
Thank you. For this item, we propose to exclude members of the public for the meeting during the consideration of the following item on the grounds that it will involve the likely disclosure of exempt information as defined in paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 12A to the Local Government Act 1972, and it is considered that the public interest is maintaining the exemption outweighs the public interest in disclosing the information. Do I have a seconder for that?
I'll second it.
Thank you very much. Can we vote on that, please? Yeah. It says verbally. Do you want me to? Verbal. Yes. Councillor Needham.
Four.
Councillor Gray.
Four.
Councillor Harper Davis.
Four.
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 And I'm four as well. Thank you. Right.